never changes.
Welcome. It's Friday. My name is Mark Santisteven. I'm joined by David Lindsay.
Hello.
Dave, you and I are getting into games.
We sure are.
What is Getting Into Games?
Getting Into Games is this podcast where we talk about games that we've played. We're going to just find new games that we're interested in, play them, and talk about our feelings about them.
Yep. Games that we don't know, games that we do know, just trying to learn about more games, play more games.
Yeah.
Talk about them.
Yeah. I want to get into games.
Yeah. So if you're interested in getting into games, join us for our podcast, Getting Into Games.
Woo!
All right. Today we are getting into Air, Land, and Sea. Air, Land, and Sea is a two-player card game. I would call it a tactical game with bluffing elements.
Yes, for sure.
And it is said to take about 20 minutes. How do you feel about that time?
When we're playing together, I feel like it
goes faster than that.
I get killed.
We'll talk more about that. that later.
So that it seems to go pretty quick in my mind. Maybe I need to spend more time.
Maybe that could be the answer. That could be the answer. So it says 20 minutes. I've definitely had some of the games take about 20 minutes. Usually when I'm teaching it to somebody or like the first time you're getting into it. I think that it probably goes a little bit faster than that.
Yeah, I would say 15, I would say, is probably 15's like a better average.
Yeah, but 20 minutes on the box. So if you're interested in a 20-minute two-player card game, this fits the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about who makes Air, Land, and Sea, Dave.
So Air, Land, and Sea, designed by John Perry.
I don't know John Perry. I just know that his name's on the box.
Yes. I'm not too familiar myself, but, I'll be honest, that doesn't really mean anything that I'm not that familiar. So.
He's got some other game credits to his list on the Board Game Geek site. I saw his Board Game Geek profile. So he's worked on a couple things, this definitely being the only one that I know of, and I guess he does some video games work, too.
Oh,
so.
Very cool.
It's
published by Arcane Wonders, which they have some other credits that you might be a little more familiar with.
Yes, just a couple things. First of all, they have a great logo. Let me grab this logo. It's a good logo.
Yeah.
It's like a dragon with this like good aqua blue letter scheme.
Like a silhouette
to it.
Of a dragon with a very kind of whimsical font.
Yes, Arcane Wonders, good logo. I like it. Doesn't necessarily like fit with what's on the box in this game.
Right.
But it's still cool. It's a cool logo. Arcane Wonders. They've published a few games. They have more games coming out. Not a ton of games. Like there's not like, some huge library of published games by Arcane Wonders, but they have some cool stuff. A couple of them that I'm interested in. Critical Mass.
Okay.
Are you familiar?
I'm not. Tell me a little more.
Critical Mass is another two-player game where you command giant robots that fight each other.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds like everything that I want in my life.
Yes.
And I'm very interested in that game. It's on my list. At some point, we'll get into it, and we'll make an episode about it. Cool game. You, like, do weird things. You have, like, a hand of cards. So you have, like, specific robot that you are, and you get a hand of cards that comes with it. You're kind of, like, shuffling and drawing your cards, and then you're building, like, new weapons on your mech.
Oh, okay.
And using certain abilities, and then some of your abilities are getting stronger, and kind of dice-throwny.
Right.
We played... It's got some comparisons to that, I guess I would say.
Mm. And then you're like battling with these robots.
Yeah, I'm less familiar with Critical Mass than I am with Dice Throne.
Okay.
But I guess that's something that I would, that you would know my comparison to. Seems cool. Giant robots fighting.
I mean, right there. I'm in.
We should play it. We'll get into Critical Mass at some point. Mage Wars Arena. This is what I believe their most popular game would be, what you might be most familiar with Arcane Wonders with. This is another two-player game that takes like an hour to play, like an hour and a half.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's like a long two-player game. You're like really strategizing. I'm not super familiar with it, but I know that it was a pretty popular and well-liked game. It's seems intense.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of time between just two people, that's
a lot of things. An intense game. There must be a lot going on. Maybe we'll look into that in the future as well. But yeah, those are other games published by Arcane Wonders. Now, Air, Land, and Sea, the theme of Air, Land, and Sea, it is not mages.
No.
Or
robots.
Robots. No robots. Tell me, like, what is the game set?
So it's a war-themed game, and the title of the game is indicative of the three theaters of war that that take place in the game. So that kind of actually kicks off, like, the setup for the game, which is you have these larger cards. So it's an all-card game. So you have these larger cards that are the three theaters, which are Air, Land, and Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the smaller playing cards that are...
Make up your hands.
Make up your hand for the game. And you get each player, there's 18 total playing cards.
Yes.
And then you have two, there's a first player and a second player card.
They're called Supreme Commander cards.
The Supreme Commander. And so you're dealt a hand of six at the beginning of the game, and that's basically all you get for the game.
And your theaters of war, their placement on the game matters.
Yes. So they're kind of between the two players, and then they're, you just put them out, set them out randomly. They don't have to be in any particular order.
So you're across the table from each other. In between you are three cards. One says Air, Land, and Sea.
Yeah. And then as you play through the different rounds of gameplay, you kind of shuffle them, just kind of move them around
to them. The one they move to the side, and the one goes back around to the other side. So
yeah, because it does matter the order that they're in for your gameplay. So
will impact your tactics.
Yeah. So it makes sense that they kind of shuffle around in each turn. So it's different each time you play.
Mm-hmm. Some differences between the first and second player too. The first player will win ties.
Yes. And there's also you can talk a little bit about the how do you win the game?
Yes. I will talk about that.
Plays into the player cards too, right? Because you get more points for less cards, is it? In their hand?
You get fewer points the more cards someone has. We'll talk about that. I'll get to that in a sec. One thing to keep in mind is there is only six cards in the entire deck per theater of war.
Yes.
There is 18 cards that you will be playing with. And there's literally numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. That's the power on those cards, I guess, if you will. There's one. Each card that you... Whenever you get your hand of cards, you are looking at the only card of that type in the game.
Right.
So if you have the six of land, the other player does not have the six of land.
For sure.
Which is heavy tanks.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a twofold, winning that you're doing in the game. Because there's winning a round, and then there's winning the game.
There's winning the round, and there's winning the game. So to win a round, what you need to do is control two out of three theaters of the battle by the time that hand comes to a conclusion. And there's a couple ways that it can come to a conclusion. But essentially, let's say you play all of your hands all the way down. Both players have played all six of their cards. There's 12 cards on the battlefield. You calculate which side has the higher number value on their side of the battle, and two theaters will win that battle.
Right.
Yep. That if that's the case, you will get 6 victory points. The first player to get 12 victory points wins the game.
Yes.
Game over.
That's it. That's if you're playing your whole hand.
That's if you're playing your whole hand, which what I find interesting about this game, and maybe may seem counterintuitive your first time coming to it, but once you've played it a few times, becomes so essential to the way that you can win this game, is that you can withdraw at any point. And when you withdraw, you will give your opponent fewer victory points.
Yes, and that's based on
the amount of cards you have in your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you have a lot of cards in your hand and you withdraw, yeah, maybe they'll get 2 victory points.
Mm-hmm.
If you're down to your last card, they might get 4.
Right.
Yeah, but sometimes you'll get down to your last card and you'll be like, oh, this is over.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost this game.
Yeah.
And you should withdraw in that case.
Right.
You should not just play it out. As soon as that realization comes to you, you should withdraw. Anyway, we'll talk about that. There's also special abilities on certain cards.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them take place instantly, and some of them take place over the course of the game. The instant cards have this little lightning bolt on the side of the card, and that just means as soon as you play this card, you're doing this action.
Right, and that's it. Doesn't happen again.
Doesn't happen again. The ongoing ones will have this little infinity symbol on them, and they just mean if they're face up on the battlefield, then this effect is in place.
Right, and that remains unless you have a card that can
flip it
or negate that.
Yep,
that ability.
Yep. So an example of that would be, oh, because this card is in play, any card that's face down on my side is worth 4 instead of 2.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Which, talk to me about playing cards face up or face down. How does that factor into this game?
Yeah, so we talked about like how each card, so there's 1 through 6 for each theater of war. And you can only play, unless you have cards that say otherwise, you can only play a card to its appropriate theater. So you can only play an air card to the air theater. Unless you have a card that allows you to move that to a different area.
You're not putting a battleship on the land.
Correct. Unless you have a card that somehow allows that battleship to be on land. How they make that work, I don't know. But they figure out a way.
But it's awesome.
But it's amazing. but you can play cards face down, and they have a flat value of 2.
And they're wild.
And there, you can play them anywhere.
Deuce is wild.
So that's a good way to look at it. Deuce is wild. Put that card anywhere. So, yeah, and that kind of plays into the tactics of the game.
Right. And knowing that you only need to control 2 out of 3 theaters, you may look at your hand and say, oh, I have this card for land. I don't want to play it on land because I don't have any other cards for land, so I'm clearly not going to win it.
Right.
I would rather play it in the sea.
Yes.
So then you would play it face down in the sea. Deuce is wild. 2 points to the sea.
Yeah. So maybe it's a 4 for land, but you're giving up those 2 points in land because it's not going to help you.
At least
but
you'll 2 get
points
it.
In another place is going to be a lot more valuable.
Yes. And it is true, once you've played it face down, if something were to happen and cause a card to get flipped over, you might just have a battleship in the sky.
Right. Could happen.
It could happen.
Could happen.
So let's say you play a battleship, like, which is the number 6. You play it in the air face down. Your opponent doesn't know that it's a battleship face down.
Mm-hmm.
He just knows that there's a face down card in the air.
Right.
Right? On your next turn, you have a card that lets you flip that card. You put it down, flip it over. There's a battleship in the sky.
Yeah.
And you have 6 extra points in the sky.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's shield. It's
it's a shield battleship in World War II.
In the sky.
Yep. Yeah. Great. That's the gameplay.
Yeah.
There's 3 cards, air, land, and sea. They rotate. You shuffle in these 18 cards, deal each person a hand of 6. You play it out. And you have to win two theaters to win a battle. You win 12 points to win a war.
Yeah. And so basically at the end of a round, which either concludes when all the cards are played or somebody withdraws, then you shuffle the cards back up. You deal out six cards again. You switch players, so like whoever was first and second, just switch each other, and then you do it again until somebody gets 12 points.
Talk to me about how you feel about the stuff.
Yeah, the stuff in the box. So we talked. It's about 20 cards total, with the Supreme Commanders and the 18 other cards for the different areas.
And then three large cards for the theaters of war.
And they give you some counting tokens. You have in denominations of 6, 3, and 1. Mm-hmm. You get some counting tokens to count the victory points there.
It all looks good.
Yeah. I mean, quality is it's like the card size are just normal, like playing card size. And they have that same feel, like linen playing card kind of.
Poker card feel.
Mm-hmm.
I do love the text on the backs of the cards.
Yeah.
I like that text. And I like the number, the thing they do with the number, the look on the numbers is, I like it.
Yeah, it's got that stencil. Mm-hmm. So I did say war theme. I didn't mention that it's really more a World War II specific theme. Based on the artwork on the cards and everything like that. So, it's not modern war. It's more, World War II.
It's World War II. So. Yeah. One thing I do want to mention, I like that the commander cards, I like that they just say Supreme Commander.
Yeah, more of a generic term.
That's all it says.
Like that, so kind of an odd, like they could have gone with general.
No, Supreme Commander. Supreme Commander is the good, yeah. I mean, but I appreciate that it's not like you're Hitler.
Right, right. Yeah, they're not assigning you any...
No.
Any...
I don't really feel like being Hitler.
I don't... No one wants to be Hitler. And I mean, like, some of the artwork is, like, a little reminiscent, like, country origin. Like, I'm looking at a car with planes on it, and, they look like British...
the planes. Royal Air Force.
So, but, like, it also is kind of ambiguous. So
the first thing that comes to mind whenever I think of Royal Air Force...
What's that?
Chicken Run.
That's unfortunate.
No, that movie's great.
It is a good movie. I guess I've seen it too many times.
Because there's the one chicken, the one rooster.
Yeah. Yeah, the rooster in the hen house.
Is like to have been in the Royal Air Force. Yeah. So for whatever reason, that's what sticks in my mind. Anyway, yes, those planes, yeah, they have a look of the Royal Air Force. Yeah. But yeah, just Supreme Commanders. That's all we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're just having battles.
Yeah.
We're just fighting battles.
Yeah.
The components for the victory point tokens feels good. Just little pop out.
Yeah. Little pop out tokens.
Tokens.
They're, everything is like of the quality you would expect it to be.
I think in some cases, the artwork doesn't necessarily like stand out as being amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of like
very passable for what you're doing.
I like it a lot because it's got a nostalgic feel to me. I would place it as like a World War II book cover. Like that's what say. Like if you were to grab a World War II novel, like some old beat up paperback off the rack.
Yeah,
because they do kind of have like the cards have a worn look to them.
They do. Like they which make is them look it's like a good a, it's a good feel to the cards. Like it just like makes you feel like you're. Like you're picking up this deck that's been sitting on the shelf for, 40 years.
Yeah, like there's it looks like the, kind of looks like the corner of the card is creased, but that's just printed on the card. That's what kind of gives me that vibe. It's like, oh yeah, it makes me want to like read some World War II trash.
Yeah.
Novels.
Yeah.
So.
Or history.
Yeah.
I got this. My uncle was like a huge history guy. Like he's just really into reading history books.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was like a, teenager, I mean, I've always been interested in history as well. And so I would talk to him about that stuff. When I was a teenager, he would always like he would buy me books for Christmas, but they were like much too dense for me. So I have this shelf of books in my bookshelf at home. I have a huge Churchill book.
Okay.
It's like the definitive Churchill biography. And I've definitely not read it. But it's there. I have two books on Alexander the Great that he gave me.
Okay.
Large books, big books, and one on Hannibal, general from the Second Punic War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Brought elephants.
Yeah.
To Rome.
Yeah, through mountains.
From the north.
Crazy. That's a feat.
That's a feat. Anyway, yes, I have those books. I have this massive Churchill biography. Maybe I'll read it someday. I don't know.
maybe not. It's there, though.
It's there. Dave, tell me, how do you feel about Air, Land, and Sea?
Dude. I love this game.
You are loving it, man.
I am in love with this game.
The first hand we played, you were like, whoa!
I was blown away. I was like, this is great. This is such a great game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it. And yeah, I think we can safely say I got destroyed. we've played a good amount of hands on this game. And yeah, I think I've won maybe two rounds out of all the games.
And zero games.
And then won two rounds by withdrawal, I will say, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't win any hands by... but I'm still, like, very passionate about playing this game. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting. I think this is the kind of game that you should play over and over again with a friend that you can both have good understandings of how the game is played.
Yeah.
You've played it over and over and over again together, and you'll still have that... You'll feel that that will make that tension be even greater mm-hmm. when you're playing cards that you've already seen each other kind of do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though there's, you know, only really 18 playing cards that you're dealing with, like the game feels fresh each hand because of the way it shakes out.
Totally. Every time you get a hand of six, you look at it and then you figure out, what can I do with this hand?
Right.
Nothing, no pre-planning. It's just, here we are.
Yeah. And I mean, you're seeing the same cards over and over again, but they play differently each time.
They play differently depending on what else you have.
And you got to, so it's a really interesting game because we talked a little bit about it being a tactical game with bluffing elements. And I would equate it in a lot of ways like poker because, and I think that's where kind of like the bluffing comes in because you have to make a first. If you're first player, you got to pick the first card to put down. And that could dictate the whole rest of how you play the game because you could put a six down real hard
real
and heavy
bold. Yeah.
on the first play and just be like, yeah, I'm putting six in air. What do you got? You
and
got
your
anything
in
there?
Just like, oh, yeah. Shit.
And then, like, if you have so the kind of way that your hand shakes out is you're probably going to be heavy on two of the three theaters of war.
Yeah,
like you're most likely not going to get because you get six cards. You're not going to get two of each kind. Although that does happen.
And
but,
if it does happen, you might maybe have a bad hand.
Yeah, you kind of don't want
probably
that.
Probably want to find the right time to withdraw.
Yeah, you kind of want that, but at the same time, the actions, the abilities of each card might not even matter. Because again, we talked about playing those cards face down. So and that's again where you kind of have to see how your opponent plays. Because if I put a card out in air, and then you put a card out in C, and then I put another card in air, and you put a card in land, I'm going to be like, you don't have shit in air.
Mm-hmm.
You got nothing. Mm-hmm. So I got to go heavy on air if I have the ability to do that. So that might be playing face down in air to, you know, playing cards face down to get those 2 points and build that up, make sure that, like, that's solid. And then you might be able to figure out, like, where you can, you know, best utilize those cards in those other areas because you do have to win two. So... But it's kind
of
like...
You also might find yourself with a hand of cards and you say, I really think I got this, but I don't want to come across too heavy-handed. So how can I string them along so that we get all the way to the end and I win it to get all the victory points?
Right.
Which we had happen like just now.
We just played a game and...
The first round,
I was like... We went into it and I said, I might actually win.
Yeah, we'll see. You were this feeling time, good about it.
I'm like, this time I'm going to actually, I might actually win a round or win a game. And I'm
playing my hand out and I've got stuff like in all three theaters, right? I've got, you know, some good strong cards too. Got the, you know, the heavy tanks are in the land. That's the six. So that's the highest value, you know, default card out of the land cards. And then, I've got the sea I'm feeling pretty good on. And then, you know, you're like kind of, you're creeping along and you're ahead.
Yeah, I was playing a lot of face down cards. So I had a card that gives your face down cards a value of 4. So normally it's 2. So you're doubling the value of any face down cards. And I also had some cards that would flip your cards.
Yes.
And so I ended up flipping some of your heavy hitters. Your six. And so we got down to the very last card, and
you were ahead.
I was like, I got this. Like, it's in the bag. Like, play my last card. Like, feeling all high and mighty. And then you played your last card.
I played my last card, and I transported the heavy tanks to the sea.
And that was it.
And got basically 6 points in that side that you were certainly not expecting to be able to be there.
Because I was winning the land, and that you only had the tanks there.
Yes.
Or maybe I think you had a card that was 1. So you had a 6 and a 1, I think.
That was the only one I had there.
Yeah, so you had the one card there. So I was like, cool, I'm winning land. Yeah. And then C, I was like, I'm winning land and C. And then air, like, who cares? Air can, you know, nothing. No, don't care what's going on over there. But yeah, then you brought over the tanks. Like, well, and
I guess I'm just going to have to bring these tanks to the sea.
Because I didn't have any cards in air, I don't think, at that point.
Yeah, the one. And you find yourself in that position, I think, a lot where after 3 cards... It's like, oh, he doesn't have any C cards.
Yeah.
So my 5 in the C is going to be plenty for C.
Mm-hmm.
So these other cards I have, I need to like find ways to get them elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you say, I need to get that card out of the C and put that somewhere where, move it, you know,
yeah,
if I can.
Yeah. So that happens. You notice that like all the time, often.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, okay, so if I'm good on this one, then there's one that my opponent is going to be good on. So the question is, which is the one that we're actually fighting over?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't know.
Mm-hmm. And it's...
You so hope it's that like, it will play out in your favor, and you just don't know.
Yeah, and so it's tough because you get this strategy. Like, you're working on this strategy with the cards you have. And, like, we're definitely, I think, at a point where, like, we both have a strong understanding of the cards and the gameplay and everything. Obviously, you're much better than I am in understanding. But we both have a strong understanding, so we are both playing well. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the difference. Is like, there's a difference between playing your hand really well and you play it to the end. And like, there's no way I would have known that you would have transported that tank to you. So like, I played the hands the best I could with the cards I had. And had you not had that card, it would have been fine. I would have won. But I think that's kind of like you were saying, like you can kind of hold out, like, you know, don't reveal your big dramatic finish until the end, and hopefully they play all their cards and you get the maximum amount of points. But I do think it's also something you need to keep in mind as you're playing the game is to remember that withdrawing is a thing.
Yes.
And like it takes a little getting used to with this type of game.
It does. You feel like you want to keep playing. You feel like you always have a chance.
Yeah.
But withdrawing, I have found to be very much the key. that this game had the key that differentiator that it's a choice you can make in this game to step away, give yourself a new hand and a new chance.
Yeah.
So whether like, that's like I'm down to my last two cards, I'm going to withdraw now, even though it's still not a great time. Like it's still giving a lot of points. I'm still giving 4 points. At least you're not giving 6.
Right. And I mean, that gives you just another round to maybe win the game.
So let's say if you're only winning, you know, you're only getting 4 points per round, you know, that's going to take 3 to win the game. If you get 6 points, you're halfway there.
2 rounds, you're done.
You're halfway there. Yeah. If you get 6 points and then you win, then you let's say you give up 6 points to the opponent. In the next round, you back out early, you gave up 3 points. You can't back out anymore.
Right.
Now it's over.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself like that far down, not a good situation to be in. So especially on that first hand, you know, finding the way to read it and knowing when to withdraw. But I mean, yeah, like you said, you always feel like you have a chance.
Yeah.
You always feel like your strategy might pull it out for you.
And maybe your strategy is to wear them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's like that could be where the 20-minute gameplay comes in, because like I think we generally would play to the end or at least to last like 2 cards. But if you got right in, like your first player, you drop down 6 or something like that, and I just go, I'm out, and you get one point, I think, at that point.
Something like that.
So you get like 1 point, and then you could essentially do that through multiple hands, just only dishing out 1 point for the other person, try again to a point where you're just like, just kind of like, you know, off your game, and then try and like, you know, maybe that's a tactic.
There's so many different ways that these few cards can be used.
Yeah.
So many different ways that you can choose to interact with them, whether that's playing things out or withdrawing super early mid game, but withdrawing is key.
Yeah. Yeah. I equated that again, like to be close to poker is you're just folding, right? So you're saying like, I'm gonna cut my losses, you know, maybe I put some money in, but I'm not going to win this. So I'm just going to leave it how it is. And you can take what you get.
You also may find yourself with not a great hand, but with a couple good cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you try and play them up front, try and intimidate the other person out.
Right. Yeah.
That's something that you can do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it kind of that's kind of part of it is like trying to read, you know, what are they doing? Like if you're putting big cards out front, it's like, are you trying to intimidate me or
right?
Or do you have a whole hand of big cards, or do you have a bigger plan going on, and you need those cards out so then you can try and move them around to other areas?
Now, you and I pulled aside 2 cards each that we'll talk about quick.
Yeah.
2 separate cards with separate abilities. Ironically, we both picked 2 cards with ongoing abilities and 2 cards with or 1 card with an ongoing and 1 card with an instant ability.
Perfect.
I have the first one I'll talk about, the Reinforce card. This card says, look at the top card of the battle deck. You may play it face down to an adjacent theater.
I believe that's the only card that allows you to draw an additional card.
Yes, it is the only card in the game from that you will be able to use an extra card from the deck. I think it is, it can be, you know, it's always nice.
Yeah.
It has a value of 1, and it will give you at least 2 to your adjacent theater. So that's nice.
Right.
Nothing about that is bad. It can be ridiculous.
Yes.
With other cards, combining it with some other cards that either will allow you to maybe flip that card that you put down. And all of a sudden you drew a 6.
Yes.
And you can flip it and have a whole 6 in addition to your whole hand.
Yeah.
That has happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. There's also a card that allows you to... you have it. Why don't you talk about it?
This one?
This one. Redeploy.
Redeploy. So Redeploy C card is a instant ability, and it's a number 4, so it's 4 points card, and return one of your face-down battle cards to your hand. If you do, gain an extra turn. So if you had this in combination with Reinforce, you're essentially just
getting an extra card and an extra turn.
Yeah.
That's insane. And with a limited hand of stuff.
Yeah. That's a huge advantage.
Huge advantage.
Yeah, redeploy, another great card, because, again, we talked about playing face down, and so you can play face down in any theater, and then you go, okay, I'm going to take that face down card I played, and I'm going to play another card.
I played it.
And so you could take that. You could take that two. You might have put a two down in air. Nothing's happening in air.
Nope.
And so you need to get that out of there, and maybe the card that you put down is a C card.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that C card back.
And then you put it in the C.
Put it in the C, yeah.
Or if you need to just, like, fake somebody out for a little bit, put something over here. Oh, you think I'm probably going to go this way. Actually, I'm just not going that way at all.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it also totally shifts the momentum. Mm-hmm. Because giving you that extra turn, you know, if you're playing, you know, the other person was being the first player, you're stealing that initiative from them by getting that extra card out front.
Yes.
So that's definitely a pretty cool card. Also, I don't know if we mentioned this. When you play a card, any cards that you play are just going in a straight line in that theater, meaning that if you have a card, your first card down, your next card that you play in the same theater is going on top of that card, and it's covering that card.
Right.
So that ability cards aren't necessarily going to affect the card that's covered. Such as, like, hey, flip a card into the adjacent theater.
Right.
You can't flip a covered card.
Yes.
The redeploy card does allow you to pick up a covered face down card.
Yes. And this is something we just found out.
We just found out, and we had been playing it wrong, and I'd played it wrong with other people before as well, because my understanding of the rule book was that any card that's covered,
right,
you're done.
Out of play.
It's covered up.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically doing what it's doing.
Locked in by what's above it.
The website for Air, Land, and Sea has clarifications for a couple of the cards. And
yeah.
That's one of them.
And we were talking about, like, just adding the word any.
Would do the thing.
Would
the answer.
Clear that up for you. But yeah, it's return one of your face down battle cards to your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Not any one of your face down battle cards.
It should say any. Extra turn. Yeah. I think it should say any. All right, the other card that I'm going to talk about is the blockade card. Blockade. Blockade makes me think of Star Wars.
Yes.
This card I have found to be controversial, both in the public opinion, meaning people having thoughts about it on, like, Instagram, like, ugh, blockade card.
Yeah.
And also with, like, people that I've played, playing this game with my dad, he, like, it can be a hard card to understand what it's doing. And so you go to play it, and it's like, okay, yep, you played that. And then they go to, like, play another card. I'm like, you can't really do that because you played the blockade card.
Yeah, like, you could hurt yourself by it.
You can definitely hurt yourself with the blockade card.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I have come around on it. It's worth 5, so that's a high value.
Mm-hmm.
It's a C card. The blockade essentially makes it so that an adjacent theater cannot have an adjacent theater that already has 3 or more cards in it, you can't play any more cards there.
Yeah, just done.
It's done. So if the C is in the middle and you play the blockade, both air and land, if there's 3 or more cards there,
yeah,
you're not playing any more cards.
Yeah.
Everything else is going to the C.
And so you have to pay strong attention if you're playing it yourself that you're not limiting. Like, if you have a plan to play other cards in those adjacent areas, you need to play them first.
You need to play them first before you play the blockade.
But at the same time, you also need to do it at a time that's going to benefit you.
Yes.
And if you play too late, doesn't really matter. So
the blockade card is good when you have an area that you have locked down and you can play the blockade card and then it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it works well too if you have if C is on the end, you're really only blocking one other area. And then so what's nice about that is you can look and say, like, if C is next to air and you don't have anything going on in air, you know, you don't really care, you know, but you have there's three cards there.
Yes.
You just block that out because if the other person is trying to get air, that just kills it for him.
You've got one more card. This card is pretty cool too.
Yeah, this one is an ongoing one. I think it's pretty powerful. It's a support card. It says the card called support. It's 1 point, but you gain +3 strength in each adjacent theater,
which is really dope. Let's say you play it in the air happens to be in the middle this round because those cards shuffle. The air's in the middle this round. You play that in the middle. You're getting 6 extra points, 3 in each theater,
right?
Land and sea.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you find a way to, with another card, let's say play a card in any theater on your next turn,
yeah,
you can just play it in the middle.
Right.
Playing it in the middle is clutch.
Yes. And there's also cards that give your, that when on top, give the cards below them a higher value. So even though this is one,
you could turn essentially it into a bump, four.
Up, bump up the value and still get the benefit of the card. So
if you play the support card in the middle, you're essentially playing a card that's worth 7 points.
Right.
If you're playing, and obviously, like, of those 7, not all of them are going to be valuable because you're going to be losing one of those theaters potentially.
Yeah. But it puts the pressure on three of the theaters.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're saying, like, even if you have mostly air cards and one of the other theaters, like, you still have 3 on that one. And so, again, it's like, if you put this kind of out as your first card,
yeah,
then it's kind of like, that's one of those cards you could see and be like, I might just back out. And
I don't feel so good about this.
Yeah. I might just withdraw and, you know, there's your 1 point. Good job.
Absolutely. Those are 4 examples of any of the cards you might find.
Yeah.
So the 6s, the most valuable cards, they do not have any abilities. They're just pure strength. Raw power, heavy bombers, battleships, tanks. Those are those.
Yeah.
The rest of them have some type of ability, whether that's instant or ongoing. Those are some examples. Various other ones. A lot of flipping.
Yeah.
Especially in the, like, 3s, you flip cards, which is very, very useful. You can flip, some cases, your opponent's cards. So if someone plays a 6, you can flip it, turn it into a 2.
Yeah.
Those kind of moves are really, really nice to be able to make. But that's Air, Land, and Sea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
like you said, love this game.
I love this
game. You have not won it.
I have not won this game, but I love it. What I think I like about it, too, is, like, it's kind of like if you're ever curious about playing like a collectible card game, I feel like this would give you a sense of what the gameplay is like in those games.
You've activated my trap card.
Right. Well, it doesn't go down that route, but it does give you the ability to, like,
you set traps,
kind of have a strategy and, you know, and kind of a back and forth that is very approachable.
Yes.
Like, you don't, because it's very simple. Here, you have these 6 cards.
Figure it out.
Do your best to win 2 of these areas.
Yep.
And so that I really like about it, because I love that kind of gameplay, like the strategy, like formulating these strategies in your head. You're just, you know, too good of an opponent. I got to find someone that's not as good.
I have one... all but one game.
Yeah.
With Thomas, friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Took me out on his first his first attempt. Other than that, I was
beginner's
undefeated.
Luck.
Beginner's luck. Yeah, he got me good. He got me good. I found introducing this game to people can be tricky because being so familiar with how the cards play and them not being so familiar, they can take longer to get to understanding their tactics.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, kind of rolling over them.
Yeah,
and so that's not always super fun to introduce someone to a game and then be like, "Here, let me introduce you to this game that I will destroy you in."
Yeah.
But
what's good is it's quick enough that you can be like, "Look, I know all these cards. You're learning them. Let's just play a couple rounds just to warm up, and then you know, and then we'll
play, get like, serious."
Yeah.
Even
like just being like, "Here, just take some time to like read the cards and like, you know, get an idea of how they're going to interact with each other."
Totally. I really enjoyed this game. I played it with my dad. I thought this would be a good game to play with him. We had a good time with it. I played it. It's easy to introduce to people. It's a small box. There's like nothing in it. There's literally 20 cards.
Right.
23 if you're counting the, you know, theater cards.
Yeah, and I think explaining the gameplay is really easy. Like, explaining how to play the game is easy. It's, you know, the hard part is, you know, figuring out your strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual idea of, like, look, you got to win two of these areas of war, and
then
you
get
know,
some points. Also,
you get these points based on
withdraw.
How many cards. Yeah.
Withdraw.
Remember that you can withdraw.
Back out when you're losing.
Yeah, that's a key thing that I myself don't do enough, I find, playing this game. But I also feel like you get in these moments where you're like, I got such a good plan here. And then, like, you get too far and you're just like, I think I got this. And then it comes down to those last couple cards. And,
yeah. You know, have to be thinking as much about what the other person plays as what you are going to play.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you made the point of, like, when you beat me in that first round, like, you got to look at, like, you're ahead, but I'm still here, so why have I not withdrawn?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then, so it's like, you must have something that's going to beat me. And then it's like you said, even if you're down to one card, it's worth withdrawing at that point. No one wants to say,
I withdraw. I lose. Yeah. No, but nobody wants to say that. But that is so key to how this game plays. It's a great game.
Yeah.
That's Air, Land, and Sea. We got into it.
Absolutely. I'm also a huge fan of World War II era stuff in general. So, like,
you are. That's a thing that we share. That's a passion that we share. So the setting appeals.
Yes.
Yes.
Specifically.
This game doesn't have to be a war game.
It does. Could be. Yeah. I mean, you could theme it anyway.
You could theme it anyway. Yeah. But I'm attracted to it because of that.
Yes. Yeah. And like the kind of nostalgic artwork and everything, you know, definitely appeals to me.
Totally. Totally. In the vein of World War II, let's say here that'll conclude our conversation about the game.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk for a little bit about some other stuff.
Yeah.
So absolutely. If you want to get to know Dave and Mark a little bit,
stick around.
not for too long here, but for a couple minutes. Tell me World War II movies. Like, what's your what's your fave? We're going to go fave.
Favorite one. Well, I have to say it's not a movie, but a series. Band of Brothers.
That's the one. Yeah.
I feel like that is...
Yeah.
It hits, like, all the points and, like, what you want to see and, like...
Absolutely. And it's good the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. And...
Literally all 10 episodes, all good.
It's amazing. Great characters in it. The fact that it's based on, like, you know, based on true events, true people... you know, they'll have like little interviews of the actual, people who are being portrayed in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so that's interesting kind of like from a historical aspect.
I am definitely due to rewatch it. I was for a while, I was watching it every year. I've probably haven't watched it in a couple of years now, maybe 2 years. Love it.
Yeah. I'll do the same thing like every year or so, just do a rewatch. And I find myself getting, like, sucked into it, you know? It's like each time I start it up again, I'm like, how many episodes can I watch right now?
Yeah. Did you like The Pacific?
I didn't watch all that. I watched maybe like the first two episodes, and I wasn't opposed to it.
It is different.
It just didn't hit me the way that the original.
Totally did. Fair. I found the Pacific to be they're both very emotional. I found the Pacific to be emotional in like a on like a darker, less hopeful side.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they mirror or mimic kind of the like true to life scenarios, because you had at the time there was like these two you know, wars going on. You had the war in the Pacific, and then you had like the, you know, European war. And the way that Band of Brothers kind of plays out is that, you know, you go from like these guys getting trained into them getting deployed, and then you have them like having been on the front lines for a while, and, you know, and then you have like new people who are getting deployed into their regiments and stuff like that. And so it feels like this very like kind of like clean version of
forward moving war. Beginning through to the end.
And I think also like what you think of when you think of like World War II, like you think of like battling Hitler, right? Like that's kind of the what you think of. But the war in the Pacific was like so much dirtier and grittier than like the battle in Europe that like
it's not as pleasant to even think about.
Right. Like, and I feel
not
like
that, that any kind of them is pleasant, but no, it's like, no.
But I like that almost, you know, from a historical standpoint, it feels like it got kind of pushed to the side, even though it was almost like, I think, a much bigger battle. I mean, we dropped atomic bombs, you know, like it was, much crazier. So I feel like that, like, watching that had more of a feeling of like what you would expect from a, Vietnam movie than than like something that's like World War II, which is more like, I don't know, you kind of get that like heroic like young men going into battle and kind of thing.
Totally
Not so much as like bleak outlook.
I found myself the last time I watched The Pacific, I was like very moved by it, but definitely in like a heavier sense than I was in Band of Brothers. Band of Brothers, you kind of, honestly, I don't know. I leave, watch Band of Brothers, and I feel like awesome. And I know that, like, you know, it's very serious stuff going on. But, like, something about the way it's framed, you know, it's very heroic, like you said. And I just, like, kind of leaves me, like, pumped up, like, want to go do something.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I leave the Pacific, and I'm like, whew. Yeah. I'm drained.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I got stuff to think about, you know? And there is one real weird episode. Like, the third episode is, like, real weird and, like, takes place in Australia, I think. And it's just, like, what's going on here? What are we doing? It's, like, guy, like, falls in love with, like, some Australian girl for, like, the episode.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, leaves.
Yeah.
It's, like, over. So that one, like, not as great. Whereas Band of Brothers, front to back.
Yeah.
Good.
Just get all the way through. I feel like I really like what I always come back to Band of Brothers is like the kind of story about leadership in it. And
yeah, totally.
Because you have these guys in training, and you know, and I you know, if you're interested in watching, I mean, it's been out forever, but you know, I'll try not to give away too much if this sparks your interest. But the person that's leading their training is ultimately who's going to lead them in battle. It's supposed to be who leads him in battle.
Right.
And he's a very aggressive person, kind of looking out for number one. And, you know,
high opinions of his own on how things should be run.
Right.
Just listening to himself.
Yeah. And then you have these other like kind of like lower ranking.
Also, he's David Schwimmer.
Curry. So you had these other officers, and you know, it kind of goes through like their different leadership styles and stuff like that. And it's interesting to kind of you know, when you think about you know, leadership as a whole, I always kind of like go back to that movie as my go-to. Is like, you know, this is the Winters is the person you want to be your leader.
Yeah,
you don't want, I forget his name.
David Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer. And you can clearly see why.
Totally.
Right? And like, so it's like, if you've ever, you know, either, I guess, I haven't been in the military, but I'm sure if you've been in the military or even just like worked a job where you had people like running the show, you know, you can equate that, you know, kind of leadership styles to people you've met in real world, I think.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here.
Cool.
It's been a pleasure. Air, Land, and Sea. This is Getting Into Games. You can find us at Instagram. We have an Instagram for our stuff. It's Dead Bird RIP. Dead Bird RIP. Follow us on Instagram. What else can they do too?
Yeah, we can also check out the website, which is deadbird.rip. Deadbird.rip. There's, you know, a little bit more about us on there.
That's the website.
Links to the podcast on there. So yeah, you can kind of get there. That will link you to everything else. But yeah, or send us an email at deadbirdrip@gmail.com.
deadbirdrip@gmail.com. Send us an email. Tell us what you thought of the show. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye. Trying to think of a quote from from like
war movie
Saving Private Ryan or something like that.
You earned it.
I can't think of any.
War.
War never changes.
War never changes. War.
All right. Best Ron Perlman impression from Fallout. Go.
War. I'm not doing an impression. I'm doing my own take on it. All right. I got to dig deep here. Deep into my chest. War. War never changes.
War. War never changes.